I went through the acquisition of a $650 million organization to a PE-backed Fortune 500 company and learned all about that and how to sell a company to Wall Street, essentially, which was crazy. Businesses don't grow, people do. And we employ that and we utilize that on a daily basis here at Indy Roof. I could care less about shingles. I could care less about gutters and siding and all that kind of stuff. That is not what motivates me. Money is not what motivates me. If somebody doesn't have a passion for helping others grow and develop, they're not really a leader that I'm interested in working with. Don't waste time working so much for some time down the road. Live life now. At the end of the day, it doesn't matter the dollars that are in your bank account. What matters is the memories that you have with your family, and we focus on those things.
Well, welcome to this week's episode of No Suits Allowed. I've got a special guest, Adam Kaminsky.
Yes, sir.
On the line here, and he is the chief operating officer of Indy Roof. So you're probably seeing a similar studio. You also cannot see their sign back here because I will have superimposed it, but there is a sign here. Yeah. And I probably just put my hand in the middle of it to, you know, cause that issue. Right. But anyway, no. So we're here at the corporate headquarters of Indy Roof Company, and Adam runs the show for the most part on all things operations and overseeing even, I'm sure, multiple things that we'll get into today a little bit. But met Adam back, I don't know, it's probably been 3 years ago maybe now?
Yeah.
Something like that, four years maybe?
Maybe three and a half. I think the first RoofCon that I went to in 2021.
Okay. So yeah, that's 4 years ago-ish. So yeah, we met and, same as, you know, I met Aaron a little bit before I met you, obviously, but you joined the band and then came over and, I'm excited to get into your story and, in the spirit of No Suits Allowed, it is, you know, completely unfiltered. Nothing's off limits. You can discuss anything you'd like to discuss, but this is really to share your story as a leader in business. Don't necessarily know how much of the entrepreneurship that comes into this. I don't know if you've been an entrepreneur per se, but definitely an entrepreneur and definitely a guy that's operated at a high level as a business leader. So I know that a lot of our episodes previously have been entrepreneurs specifically, but this is a valuable chat to have because you're going to give the inside look on, you know, the guy that's running it and being the guy, but not necessarily the one that maybe birthed the business. And obviously that was Aaron mostly. So yeah. So excited to have you. Let's start off with, and you can say hi if you'd like to.
Hi everyone. No, this is exciting. I'm really looking forward to it and having the conversation and excited to see where we go.
Cool. Start with, and I know this is always the normal podcast thing to do, but start just with a little bit about yourself and where you're from and anything you'd like to share surface level just to kind of familiarize the audience with who you are.
Yeah, sure. So I have kind of an interesting background. I grew up in a blue-collar household. My dad was in factories up until the point I was, I think, 9 years old, 8 or 9 years old, and then got into construction, primarily remodels of high-rise hotels in downtown Chicago and things like that, pretty big projects. And so I've been around that my whole life. Started working when I was 14 years old full time. I of course just wanted to be just like dad and get started working and all that kind of stuff. And so, I have done a lot of different things, had an opportunity to kind of, really learn all the way from the beginning. So my first job ever was actually working for a concrete company. Friend of my dad owned a concrete company, and my first job was I worked in the yard and would scrape off concrete forms with a garden hoe and diesel fuel and did that.
That sounds like a lot of fun.
Oh man, it's so fun as a 14-year-old kid to want to do that. But then I got to, kind of join the crew, learn how to pour concrete, finish concrete and all that kind of stuff. Then I migrated and went and worked with another one of my dad's friends and a guy that went to our church. He was a home builder. And so I got to learn and work with my hands how to frame a house and literally from the ground up.
So you were and we're going to get into this, but you started in blue collar and then I think you ventured off and then you came back to blue collar. So tell us what that.
Yeah. So, 18-ish years old, was, making really good money working and all that, still, finished school and all of that. But, just kind of wanted to listen to my dad. You know, he kept on telling me, hey, this is going to make an old man out of you long before you are. You need to work with your mind, not with your hands and all of that. And I didn't really care about it at the time. But the more that I thought about it, that actually seems to make sense. I decided to shift, and I actually moved down here from Chicago to Indianapolis for to go to school. So I went to Indiana Bible College for a degree in theology, actually, in biblical studies.
So don't debate this man on the Bible here. He'll get you. I'm just kidding.
And that's why I came down here. Met my now wife while I was in school, and we of course ended up getting married and starting a family here in Indianapolis, and so I've actually lived in Indianapolis now longer in my life than I lived in the Chicagoland area. So I am officially an Indianapolis native. But
what do they call Indianapolisian Indians? What do they call them? They don't call them Indians, obviously, or You know, what do they call?
That's our minor league baseball team.
Yeah, so I guess yeah. What do you call Hoosiers. Yourselves? Hoosiers. Well, yeah, you're the Hoosiers, but yeah. You gotta have. There's not a the. You that's know how it. Every you're state. From, that's it. That's it's just Hoosiers
from Indiana. You're a Hoosier.
I should know Absolutely. That too. My whole family's from Indianapolis. So.
I think it rubs some of the Purdue people the wrong way, but I mean, because
Boilermakers.
Yeah, exactly.
They're not. So no. That's so off topic. Continue.
Yeah, sorry. No. So went to school and then, of course, got married and didn't really feel like I wanted to pursue anything like from a ministry standpoint. I just kind of thought of things a little bit differently. That hey, I didn't need to be like behind a pulpit or running a church or anything along those lines to have an impact of faith on people. And I could do that in the workplace. And so, got back involved in the workplace, was doing, high-end audio, video and alarm systems and things along those lines to pay the bills and did really well with that. Developed a knack for being able to communicate really well with customers. And so, I was a project manager in that business that I worked at. And, anytime that there was an issue or anything along those lines, I would typically be the one that would get to go talk to the customer just because I, again, developed a knack for it. There was a time in 2000 and, it was 2005. I can tell you, I was in Jeff George's house, the NFL football player, was running some wire and doing some things for an audio video system in his house. And the house had like a foot of water in the basement. It was just a framed house. It was mid-November, spitting snow, real cold and everything. Didn't have like rubber boots on or anything, so I'm trudging through water and all that kind of stuff. And I remember being on a ladder, and my back just hurt so bad from being so cold, my feet being wet and everything, almost to the point of tears. And I remember that was the time that I actually made the decision, like, this is nuts. I can't do this anymore. And so literally on my drive home from that, from that day, from that job, I called a friend of mine who's actually my wife's uncle, a good friend of mine. We hunt and all that kind of stuff together. And I said, hey, I'm ready to get out of really, really get out of working with my hands. Like I can't do this anymore. And, I said, I want to get a job in sales if you can help me with it. And he said, yeah, you know, let me see what we can do. He connected me with a company out of Cincinnati, Ohio that wanted to start an office in Indianapolis selling alarm systems. And so the first sale that I ever made in my entire life was tricking these guys into thinking I was the best guy to help them start an office. And I got the sale. I closed the deal.
You did. I was making a joke. I have to say this, sorry, because last episode or when the episode, whenever that does air, that I spoke with Aaron, we were joking and he's like, you make me sound like a bad guy. Like I was obviously messing with it, but he was like, yeah, it was like whenever I asked Adam the first time if he'd come work with me, he told me no. And then I just like gradually like had him doing all these things. And then he like, and I said, so you basically just, you know, you worked him.
Me.
You tricked him. That's what I'm saying. And then he was like, well, that sounds bad or whatever. I was like, but you did the same thing to them. You kind of tricked him a little bit. Yeah. So.
No, I'm absolutely the best person to start this office. I mean, I know the alarm business. I'm good at communicating with customers. Like, why wouldn't you? And that just goes to show you that assumptive selling absolutely does work. So, you know, fast forward about 6 months later, I've started this office. Things are going really well. I would sell alarm systems and then they would actually send an installer from Cincinnati. I would group my installs to be done on like Thursdays and Fridays. So he'd come out, stay the weekend, install these alarm systems that I would sell. Mm-hmm. Got a phone call from one of the owners and he said, hey, you're doing a great job. Keep up the good work. Like we're really impressed. We've never had anybody start as quick as you have. And this is really cool. We're really encouraged. I'm like, oh man, that's great. Thank you so much. He said, oh, by the way, we sold the company. So you're going to be working for somebody else. But just want to kind of give you a heads up on that. And I said, oh, you know, I appreciate you giving me the heads up on that. By the way, this is my 2-week resignation. He was like, no. I said, I've been through acquisitions before. I don't really want to go down that road. And he said, no, this company's interesting. They're really moving and growing. And we think that you'll be a great fit. They know you personally, but on paper, they're really interested in having you on the team. And so we want you to stay. And I said, well, I'm not signing a contract or anything, but I'll stick around for a little bit. I actually even called the other company that I was working for prior to this and said, hey guys, I'm coming back. But I tried it, and I tried it for 17 years, and it was a great ride. So
valiant try, sir.
Yeah.
17 years.
Yeah, no, it was a rocket ship. So when I started there, it was, just a small regional company selling ADT alarm security systems, selling and installing. And, just in Indiana, Ohio, Illinois, and a part of Kentucky. Like that's all that we were. Around 26 million in revenue, something like that. So pretty decent size.
That's solid.
Yeah, that's not bad. And then we had great ownership in that business, and that just had a vision for growth, and really a vision for people growth, which then fueled the business growth. And it's where I learned the phrase that I live by today, that businesses don't grow, people do. And we employ that, and we utilize that on a daily basis here at Indy Roof. And so for the next 17 years, I had the privilege of migrating through that business, learning how a business can grow the right way, also learning some mistakes along the way, as you can imagine. But ultimately in my 17 year career, was able to be promoted through the ranks, and was offered an associate partnership, and became the youngest ever promoted executive of the organization, which was really cool because, again, that business focused on people development. And if you work, we always said you should work harder on yourself than you do on your job. And so how do you become better? How do you get smarter? And so I got paired with mentors that were business leaders that were running Fortune 500 billion dollar organizations, like the CEO of LensCrafters, like the CEO of Family Christian Bookstores. Like these were the guys that I was rubbing shoulders with and learning from. And it just was an incredible opportunity. And then, an unfortunate time occurred. The owners, got divorced. And so in that situation, they, you know, we kind of wondered what was going to go on. And then ultimately it led to selling the organization, which ended up being an immense blessing as well. But so I, worked on the, you know, went through the acquisition of a $650 million organization, to a PE backed Fortune 500 company, and learned all about that and how to sell a company to Wall Street, essentially, which was crazy learning all those components, and stayed on after all that, was invited to stay on. And I did for 15 months with the integration of the two organizations, but ultimately just, I had this hole there was just this missing piece, working for this larger organization. And it was really centered around taking care of our team members. And that was my role. I was the VP of leadership development and customer experience. So all things people related, you know, your HR functions and your training and all that kind of stuff. And then of course the customer service function. And, in that larger organization, it was more of a customer first mentality. And I've always believed in, you know, I think it was Richard Branson that said that if you take care of your people will take care of your customer. Yep. So I bought into that. So I decided I needed to leave. And so, I didn't have a job lined up or anything along those lines. And
I heard you did a little bit of consulting in the process, like in the middle of between your tenure here and there.
Yeah. So what happened was, it was actually my wife and I are driving to my going away party. And, we're halfway there. I look over at my wife and I was like, hey, I'm not going to tell people that. My plan was actually to take a year off. You know, as you can imagine, getting a company ready for sale, then going through the integration, I had 26 months, 28 months of,
yeah, there's a lot that goes
not being home a lot.
Yeah.
And, you know, at this time, my kids are middle school, you know, just started middle school and everything. I was like, I want to take some time to be with the family and all that. So I was going to take a year off and just kind of hang out with the family, take care of them and do some stuff. I'm also a person that, like, I have to stay busy. So I knew I wouldn't, like, it's not like I was going to sit around with my feet home or my feet up or anything along those lines. But so we're driving to this going away party. And I look at my wife. And I was like, hey, it feels a little weird to tell people that I'm going to take a year off. Like, let's not do that. She's like, well, what are you going to tell people what you're doing? And I said, well, we'll just tell them I'm consulting. And she was like, okay. And I was like, yeah, we'll tell people.
Go with that story.
Yeah, I'm consulting. So we go to the party and it was great. And, you know, this is in the midst of COVID and everything. So a lot of us weren't even working in the office. We were working from home and talking to people, oh, what are you going to do? Oh, I'm consulting. Like, oh, that's cool. But I have one lady, her name was Erica Bish. She actually reported to me. She was the director of training for the company. And, you know, what are you going to be doing? I said, well, I'm going to be consulting. She said, oh, that's interesting. What are you going to consult about? I was like,
like, oh, I really didn't think that, you know, much more than this.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I should have thought through the script.
Go ahead.
I kind of paused for a second and she said, well, is it going to be like on recruiting and culture development and that kind of stuff? Cause that's that's what I'm passionate about. And I was like, exactly.
Yes, that.
Yes. That. And she was like, you know, my husband really needs help right now.
You landed client number one at this.
In that moment.
In that meeting.
In that moment.
Yeah.
And she said, would you be interested in talking to him? And I was like, yeah. I had a phone call with him 2 days later and I got my first client on this fake consulting job that I started.
No LLC. Just a thought.
I swear. He was the COO of a very large bathroom remodel company and he needed some help with finding recruits. And then I found a couple of other places too, just to kind of do some more speaking engagements than anything almost, but, and got to have fun with that. Well, anyways, now I've got this bathroom remodel thing. And one of the things that they wanted me to do beyond the culture was actually find people to actually install the bathrooms. And they're like, can you do that? And I was like, yeah, I can do that. I actually called John Dye. He and I went to the same church at the time and I said, hey man, you do something with contractors, don't you? Cause he always had that American Contractor mm-hmm. show truck and mm-hmm. all that. And I was like, I know you do something. I didn't really know him. I said, I know you do something with contractors, but like, I need to get plugged into a network where I can help find some
people
installers. And he was like, oh yeah, I can definitely help you with that. What are you doing? Consulting. And he was like, on what? And I was like, on
that
culture and recruiting. He was like, man, I got this guy. Yeah. You should have a conversation with him because he needs somebody to help him with that. And I'm like, cool. Introduces me to Aaron. We have a phone call he's like, yeah, I need somebody to help me, find somebody that can help run the operations of the company and all that kind of stuff. And so that's kind of how we met. We met, I don't know, it was about a month long engagement really before anything got too serious. At that time I had actually gotten a call from the founder of the company where I worked for 17 years. His dad, who was the chairman of the board of directors for that company, was actually the chairman of the board of directors for another organization that did culture development and leadership training. And he called me, he said, hey, we want you to apply to be the president of this company. Mm. And I was like, babe, God answers prayers, right? We prayed a lot. And I was like, this is exactly what I'm going to do. It's doing exactly what I love doing, working for the family that I love that has already given our family so much. Like, this is absolutely God, like no question about it. And so I start kind of going through the interview process. I was actually driving to my parents' house to help my dad with a project. Aaron calls me, said, hey, I just want to let you know I found the person that I want to lead that operation stuff that I was telling you about. But actually it's going to be a bigger role than that. Like he's going to run the whole company. And I was like, oh, that's cool. I'm thinking, I lost commission. That stinks, but whatever. He's like, yeah, it's you. And I just started laughing. I'm sure he probably told you. I just started laughing.
No,
like,
he didn't tell you that.
Yeah, I literally laughed. I said, no, man, it's not me. And he was like, no, it's you. And I was like, no, it's not me. And he stayed persistent with it though. And I told him what was going on with the other thing. I was like, dude, no offense. I think you got an awesome company. I think you got a great chance at greatness and all that kind of stuff.
So what was ultimately the thing that that made that decision for you? I mean, obviously you spent time, you spoke with your wife, you prayed about it, but I'm saying like, was there one thing or couple things or a handful of things like
honestly,
that said, hey, I want to do this over that?
Yeah. So honestly, it was really just all about the prayer side of it. because I would literally, Connor, you know, Heron was so persistent. Like at first I really was not interested and didn't want to entertain him, but he was so persistent with it. And I was like, oh, I guess I got to think about it at least. Like, it's weird to not think about it. And I would pray about it or whatever. And, you know, I'd kind of fleece God and say, well, I wouldn't even think about it unless this happens. And then I'd get a text from Aaron and he'd say, hey, I was thinking we should do X. And I'm like, oh, that's a weird coincidence. But anyways, God, you really got to show me that this, and this happened three times, three different things. And there was one more thing that I told my wife. I said, I'm going to pray about it and everything. But I said, I don't even know how I'm going to bring it up, but if he won't do this, then it's not even a chance. Literally. I was literally in my living room, like on my knees in prayer about it. Not just like, you know, driving like, oh God, help me. Yeah. No, I was literally on my knees in prayer about it. As I'm finishing that prayer, my phone vibrates. I get a text from Aaron. Hey, I was thinking, I really want to do X, Y, or Z for you. And I actually just, and I almost cry now, but like just started bawling. And I was like, this is so weird. Like, how am I going to say no to this family that I love, doing this job that I love, for this chance of this guy that I just met?
Yeah, you just met.
I remember thinking like, I don't know what I'm going to tell Andrea, my wife. And, but I did. And she said, and before I could get the words out, she said, you need to take that job. She's like, you absolutely need to take that job. And it ended up not being a job. It ended up being a partnership. But yeah, it was pretty incredible. So long story, but that's how I got here to where we are today.
Yeah. So that's a great story. In the process of, you know, let's talk about as a business leader specifically in the previous era, right? And we don't have to go down the road. I've had other topics unless you want to. I mean, there's obviously a lot that's wrapped up in mergers and acquisitions and a lot that goes into preparing a company to be sold. And it's, unless you're trying to just like put a bolt on to something that's already existing, you're just trying to get acquired through, you know, merging resources and additional people, but like actually trying to like turn a business for a significant profit and be able to exit with some legitimacy. I know there's a lot of work there. We don't have to necessarily go into that unless you want to. I am curious though, however, how you went from, you know, okay, you were the guy that was in the, and I guess, I mean, I shouldn't say that alarm systems and whatever isn't blue collar, so I guess it technically is, but like you went into this space of being like you're an executive of a pretty large organization. And I guess like, what are some of the things that you would say were the largest learning lessons then, or things that you would say, hey, this is, you know, if you're talking to somebody, you know, that's listening to this, like as a mentor per se, what would be the things that you're like, hey, you know, this and this gets you, you know, I'm not saying gets you where you were, but I'm saying gets you to be successful in that type of role, or in general, just what were the biggest learning lessons for you then, you know?
You know, I think the biggest thing that, for me personally in my journey, you know, it was really interesting. So, I didn't end up finishing my degree in theology. So I didn't end up even finishing that. And I actually, you know, it was really interesting, Connor. I had one person that I worked for, at that business. I really wanted to get promoted and we had lunch and all that kind of stuff. And he looked me in the eye and he said, Adam, you're never going to be beyond a manager role in this company. And I said, well, why is that? And he said, 'cause you don't have a degree. He said, for anybody to be a director or higher, you're going to have a degree. And I thought, man, that's kind of crazy. I kind of get it. And so I had a way like, do I want to go back to school or anything along those lines? But really, ultimately, I think, you know, in that experience, by the way, fast forward 6 years from that conversation, I had that guy's job. That's the executive role that I took.
And gotcha. I'm just kidding. boom, roasted. Just kidding.
So, all right. But really what it came down from for me was the something that I learned and what my journey was. And I think that a lot of people can grow from this is, number one, no one's ever going to outwork me. Hands down. No one's going to outwork me, because I knew that I did have to work harder because I didn't have a degree in that situation. And so I had to prove myself on a different level. So I wouldn't ever let anybody outwork me. The other thing is the initiative that I displayed unknowingly became actually a recipe for my success and my development as I graduated through the ranks in different roles. And so ultimately what would happen is And I bounced all over the business in sales and training, in customer experience, in key relationship development, and various different things. What I realized that I became really good at was when I would take on a new role at any level, I really dove in to obviously understand what the role was, what the department is, but I dove in to figure out where are the problems, what are the gaps, what is the data telling us that the issues are right now. That was the first thing that I would dive into. As I was doing that, what I learned was I needed to find the person that could be my right hand and that ultimately could take my job from me. And I think a lot of people miss out on that because they're fearful that people are going to take their job from them. I learned that if I could train somebody to do what I'm doing, number one, that freed me up to do more things. But then that also showed the business like, wow, whenever Adam takes over a department, he produces a ready now leader. Yep. So I developed a reputation like if there's a problem in customer experience, send Adam, he'll go fix it. And you know, it's kind of weird to talk just about me because it is a team level thing, but that's just the recipe for success that I learned. And so that's why I bounced back and forth within the business was because I could quickly identify the problem from a database perspective, implement solutions that lasted, and then also create and develop leaders.
In the loop.
Yeah. And that was the big recipe of success from the growth trajectory.
That's interesting. That's a good principle, especially for those, because you know, not everybody that's going to listen to this is going to be an entrepreneur. That does tie into, especially when you're starting a business brand new, it's the same type of concept that you would recommend. But even in an established business like you're referring to, you know, going in, working in a department, solving those problems, data-driven, you know, solutions, and then as you said, like building the team around it and then kind of pitching out and then going in the next thing or whatever. And that's interesting because I think that, yeah, most people, for sure, most people, like you said, are like almost threatened by, I mean, I know when I worked in corporate, the overall feeling was like, and I'm the same way as you don't like to talk about myself, whatever, but you know, IQ is better than most, problem solvings and solutions better than most. And whenever you get into situations like that, as you I'm sure were and are now, it can be intimidating to some people. And then they don't, in the way I look at that, me being the person that is like, hey, I am trying to grow teams around me and do things even as in the world that I'm in now. It's very much a, like, if I find a person that's like an Adam, or in our case, like for me, I'm just going to mention my VP, but Michaela, it's like, I'm like latching onto those people. I'm like, listen, I got to get you up to speed on all of this. Cause I'm trying to not necessarily just replace myself, because like you said, there's always the next thing, but, to build around them too, you know, and that's super important. I think that's a good takeaway from that piece. As far as your stuff, when you talk about, where you are now, and into the future, and obviously your role. And I know, yeah, it's like a partnership role here. I know you're incentivized off of how the business performs. I don't know all the details. I know you and Aaron have a good thing going, but, I guess when you consider like where you are now and the deal and what you've been doing over the last 4 years and like where you're headed with this, like obviously you have other passions and I know you're a faithful man and you know, talk about the impact that you want to have with your faith, et cetera, but like, Is there anything that with this business, you're like, yeah, you know, there's continuing, and I know you guys are growing from what I was told from Aaron, you know, recently, it was like, you're growing at a more steady pace now, whereas when you first came in, it was like explosive growth. And now it's kind of more of a steady growth thing. Do you feel like that's the trajectory and the thing that you're like, hey, it's going to always be profitable. It's always going to be in a position where it's staying right sized and that's just how you operate? Or do you feel like there's something big around the corner for Indie Roof? Or do you think, I mean, like, I guess where is the now, or like, where are you going now with all this?
Yeah.
Since you're here?
So, you know, so with taking on, you know, since Aaron and I started working together and then we formed our partnership together on Indie Roof, now Restoration, not just company.
Oh, Indie Roof.
Indie and Roof Restoration.
Yeah.
And then, you know, so now I own three businesses, some commercial real estate and all that as well. And so one of the things that I had to do was very similar to that principle that we just talked about was, I've got to make sure that we've got a strong senior leadership team within this business so that I can focus on the other businesses as well. mm-hmm. In the commercial real estate and all of that. And it's a tricky thing, but again, it just goes back to having those ready now leaders that can take the ball and run with it. Right.
What do you feel makes up a, like, I mean, that's a real broad question, but like, what makes up a good leader to you when you look at that? When you look at a person, you say, "Hey, they have potential." Like, what stands out to you? And you could even just give me like three things or a one thing, like just.
Yeah. So I think it's a couple of different things. Number one, they have to have a passion for people. And I tell people this all the time, and I don't mean like disrespect to any of our customers or anything along those lines. I could care less about shingles. I could care less about gutters and siding and all that kind of stuff. That is not what motivates me. Money is not what motivates me. I like it. I've been broke. I've had money. I'd rather the latter.
Sure.
So, but it's not a just motivator.
It's a sustaining right. motivation. Yeah.
And I think it's the same thing just with leadership is first and foremost. Cause again, this philosophy of businesses don't grow, people do. If somebody doesn't have a passion for helping others grow and develop, they're not really a leader that I'm interested in working with, because I know what happens. Because in that person, they might be great at their job. They might be a great accountant or sales VP or director or whatever. But if it's just about the numbers and it's never about the people, then the numbers will go like a roller coaster up and down, and they'll be crazy. So first and foremost, it's that care for people. And then do they possess the ability to go through like Maxwell's levels of leadership where it's not just about having the title for themselves, but can they replicate themselves in leadership? And that's a huge key.
Well, for me, it's like, and those are two obviously great things, but like, I didn't know with your level, because I know you're an attention to detail guy and some of these things. Like, I just know that a lot of times building in like a real strong foundation for leadership involves, and obviously involves a lot of things, right. But a lot of the criteria even for, someone like me is like, they got to have, attention to detail if they don't have that attention to detail. Right. So, but yeah, the leadership elements, I was just curious about that specifically.
It depends on the role too. Right. So we've got a director of operations here. That's a role that I need somebody to be like very attentive to details, very well documented, very well, spoken when it comes to being able to articulate opportunities or challenges or anything along those lines. Now the director of sales, I don't necessarily need that level of attention to detail. I need somebody that can motivate people. And so it kind of depends on the role that you're hiring for. But yeah, there's certainly attributes, and that's kind of why I picked on the higher level stuff is because
people first stuff, and
you depending on the department that you're operating in, you've got to have a little bit of different skill sets.
Yeah. Well, sorry to cut you off. I just wanted to ask you, like, when you were saying like find good leaders, build it up, your role now, you're trying to kind of assimilate the squad that's going to allow you to, again, to elevate into the next, so pick up on that. You're working on that. And then for you, it's like, what are some of the things that are on your roadmap to accomplish, I guess, or
kind of go back to that question, like, hey, is it the steady growth? Is it the rocket ship growth? Like, what's the goal? So, why you want to grow, I think is more important than anything. First and foremost, like, why do you want to grow? Do you want to grow just to sell a company? Do you want to grow to, have a bunch of money? Do you want to grow to, so you can expand the great things that you're able to do for the team members? Like, understanding that, I think is paramount. Because if you don't really have that strong and compelling why, it's easy to get sidetracked. So for us, we talk about what our goals are in being a $50 million organization by 2028. It's not just having that goal, but why do we want to have that goal? Why we want to have that goal, Aaron and I are in lockstep on this, is because of the three places that we invest our money. And we invest first and foremost back into our business, more marketing and more opportunities, things along those lines. We invest into our team members, whether that's personal or professional development, and we invest into our community. So why have $50 million in revenue? Because we want to do more of those. We want to invest more into those three categories. That's our why. And so having that why is absolutely a strong component for us.
Yeah. Good, man. So anything from the standpoint of, obviously which you don't look old enough to have been to tenured somewhere, 17 years, bro.
I know. I appreciate
doing something good.
I appreciate that.
What are you doing? You rubbing oil or something?
Or what are you doing? You getting coloring up that hair a little bit? Yeah. You don't have enough gray.
Short hair.
You don't have much more gray than I do, and I know that you've been through the ringer.
Good
so
jeans, I guess. And honestly, if you look at pictures from 4 years ago when Aaron and I started working together, I didn't have any gray hair. So I don't know if that.
Oh, that's roofing, bro. That's called roofing. Yeah, that's what exactly. That is. No, your family. We'll pivot to end here, but like, family stuff. The balancing act of it. I a lot of times ask this question, like, did you have a singular goal in mind? Like, obviously you're still someone that's managing the family. We all do. We always, have to be present, be involved as much as we can. Especially when you're talking about the kids being in like middle school at the time you're in the thick of a lot of your career stuff. Sounds like they're a little bit older now, but like, were you good at just compartmentalizing things and just letting it be? Like, what has been some of your philosophy, I guess, to just go through life and be able to do both things?
Yeah, that's a great question. And for me, you know, you always hear people talk about, well, what's your work-life balance and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, so that's a question. I'm going to try to refrain from asking it that way. So I don't need to say balance because balance is not the right word. I mean, how did you go about it is kind of what I guess, like as stupid as that question is iterated, it's more of like, how did you go about doing both things? Because they're very difficult to do.
It's through this thought of, I don't believe in work-life balance. I believe in work-life integration and where do different things flow in and out. There's times when, so if you think about work-life balance, that means that you have two sides of a scale, right? Because that's how you balance something. And so that means you're either on this side of the scale or you're on that side of the scale. And so when I say work-life integration, it's how do I, even if I'm not in the office, but I need to address something right now, for work, I'm going to go ahead and address it. But at the same time, when I'm in the office, if there's a family thing going on, maybe I'll leave the office or handle it. So it's kind of that.
Weave in and out.
And that's something that's super important to Aaron and I both, which again is something that I think why he and I work so well together is because that's what's most important to us. This year's an interesting year for my family and I, just because, so both of our kids actually just graduated high school this year.
Interesting.
And so, you know, we knew going.
You both don't look old enough to have kids. So compliments. Yeah. There must be something in the water of Indianapolis.
It's.
Don't know. Anyway, continue.
That good old Pacers H2O.
Oh.
Anyways, okay. Right along.
Continue. We're going to skip by that. Clearly, the Oklahoma City Thunder water does not have the same ingredients to look like this when you have kids that are in college or whatever. But continue.
So this year was important to me. Where again, you know, I've spent a lot of time building a career and all that kind of stuff. But I kind of stepped back at the beginning of the year, and Aaron and I had a conversation. I said, "Hey, I'm going to take more time off this year than I normally do, just because this is really my last year with my kids before they go to college or start jobs, or, you know, whatever, start families even, you know, who knows, like this is it. So I'm going to be real intentional with that time." And so, it's awesome to have a business partner that agrees with that type of life philosophy. And he does the same thing. And that's what's great about our relationship is number one, we both have strengths opposite of each other, I would say, and we've got weaknesses opposite of each other, so we're very complementary. But then also 100% alignment on certain things, and family is that area where, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter the dollars that are in your bank account. What matters is the memories that you have with your family, and we focus on those things.
Yeah, I actually just got done announcing to my team recently that I'm going to be taking a 25-day trip in our RV to go up through Maine and into Nova Scotia and back down. And it's the first time it's the first time I've ever taken something that long. Yeah. The max is I've always usually tried to stick with is it's going to be a 2-week thing, right? Yeah. Or something like that. Now this one will probably incorporate not being able to like completely shut it off. I'll have to have a couple of days here.
What's
and there,
that integration,
but,
right?
But that's, and you're right. That's one of the things that I've, so what I did, and I'm sure many people listening have, or at least the ones that are driven like this will try to do, and they're like me, maybe they're a bit hard-headed, where they go one direction, full tilt, 100%, and it is that, like you said, the balancing, and then it's like, give me like 2, 3, 4. I remember when I married my wife, even I was like, I just need like 5 years, just like, almost not saying get out of my way, like that'd be disrespectful, but it was like, let me get what I need to do, And then like, we'll be good. We'll be set. Right. And then it didn't work out. It went flips and turns and ups and downs, and business partner didn't work out. And this thing that I put money in didn't work out, whatever. And not that we didn't still like, it's the stock market, right? It's still going trending up, but there was a lot of dips in the process. And then it didn't get to like, where it was like, cool, we're there. Boom. Now I'm going to spend time with the family. So, yeah, that's something I've been actually learning more recently, is about more of that and integrating that. So
I just think it's so important. I was, you saw me looking off into the distance as you were talking. I wasn't waiting for my turn to respond.
You're good.
I was, trying to think of the year. So it was 2017, a colleague of mine, his wife passed away, and he was at that time, I'm wanting to say it was early 50s, maybe mid 50s at the latest. And, he'd done well for himself in our business, and was going to be retiring within a couple of years. And, I remember going to the funeral. It was me and another one of my colleagues. We rode together. We went up and, you know, go to the funeral. You do the whole line where you go in front of the casket and all that kind of stuff. And we're standing there in front of the casket, and, you know, so sorry for your loss and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And, Kevin Whipple was his name, grabs me and my other buddy and kind of pulls us off to the side. And he says, "Hey guys, I want to tell you something." And I'm like, "Oh man, this is an interesting place to want to have a conversation, but let's do it." And he said, "Hey," he said, "look at my wife." And so we both literally look at his wife sitting in this casket. And he said, "I'm 4 years away from retirement," or whatever the number was. It was less than five. "I'm 4 years away from retirement. I thought I was doing everything that I should to make sure that I built the right life for Carol and I." And he said, "Look at me now. I've everything that I worked so hard for now is sitting right there in front of you. Don't waste time working so much for some time down the road. Live life now."
That's good.
And that, man, that you want
to. Sure, that was a pretty impactful moment.
I mean, insane.
His wife's funeral and right. Your being pulled.
And so I remember that, and I've got that kind of workaholic mentality, and it's hard for me to break away from things, but I try to go back to that moment and remember like, no, I need to take time right now. So that means that for me, this is just a me thing. For me, I can't, what's that one book where like it says to do like 9 week sprints or whatever, like you work real hard for nine weeks and then take a week off or whatever. Like, that kind of thing doesn't work for me, because there's so much you can miss in a personal life
100%
for in 9 weeks. And I just, I just choose not to.
Yeah. I think that's the life I lived, and even probably more aggressive than that. And not that this is about me, this is certainly to interview you, but yeah, that's actually a really, I think that, if you choose to work in spurts, which has been kind of my methodology even more recently, but working in spurts and not like that's my lifestyle, right? You know, we had some pretty egregious travel in May and June where I had to be gone a lot, to fulfill some, you know, promises from clients. And I was gone for like 46 out of 50 days, like absolutely not what I want my life to look like. But, you know, instead of me getting back home, be like, okay, we missed all these things, and now I got to do a little bit of catch up with the family and then get right back into the hunt of work. I like, all right, we're going to go to Indianapolis. While we're here, we're doing the family reunion thing. Yep. Then we're going to go home for a couple of days. Kids got to do some stuff with school things. And then as soon as he gets out Thursday at 2:00, we're heading up to the Northeast, and we're just going to, and I'm going to spend, and it's not that that's the, obviously we don't want to have that like, whoa, we went from this to that, but I'm saying the importance of it being like, okay, obviously I have work to do. I was, you know, gone from behind a computer for, you know, most of 2 months, and like now I'm like going off somewhere else. And like one of the individuals in my company was like, "That's like the most crazy thing I've ever heard." Cause they're like, "You were just gone for that long." And I'm like, no, but this is like, I want to spend time with my family. I want to be, I want to make memories and go up the coast and do all the things. So yeah, that's something that's very recent for me, that it's funny you say integration. I never understood that concept, and I never had one of those types of moments like you had, but it was like, I just knew I did have a moment. Well, it was more about personal health stuff, but it was not that type of moment that was like, oh, I got mentored in a way where I was like, dude, you need to really reel it back. I just never really had anybody telling me you need to reel it back. I just was kind of go. And then eventually I was like, all right, you know what? This is not going to work. Like, this is not the timeline, like you said, of just like to get to the target and then to enjoy it then or enjoy your family then. Like, you know, the kids are only a certain age once and all that stuff. So yeah, it's important that you, you said that.
That's and it's good. Interesting too, because it, you know, so, you know, when my kids were in that kind of, actually grade school. So, and I'm telling you this because it's really interesting how things like come around. Like I'm so, we've got employees that, hey, childcare didn't work out for me today. Can we bring the kids into the office? I promise they'll be, I'm always like, please bring them in. I love when kids come into the office and all that kind of stuff. Again, that goes into that integration and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. I think subconsciously for me, it's a lot of our employees, their kids are the age that I'm kind of missed out on with my kids. So it's, you know, kind of get to maybe
enjoy that, let them have
enjoy that kind of, that kind of age or whatever with playing ping pong with them or whatever. But yeah, man, just sharing that. And then, you know, and this is the thing I think you got to think about as a business owner too, is that's cool that we're in a position to be able to do that. Like I'm in a position to be able to take more time off, and I'm still, I'll take less than 6 weeks off this year. Like it, so when today I'm going to take more time off. It's just more than probably the 2 weeks that I normally take off. But then as a business owner, I'd encourage everybody that's listening right now is, how do you enable your team members to be able to do that as well? Like, what kind of practices do you have in place where not only you can live that, and because you worked hard for it and you've earned it and all that kind of stuff, but your team members do too.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny you say that, cause I just got off a conversation and we'll pivot and wrap it up here. But, having that self-awareness of like, well, I don't want to be the guy that's living a double standard. Like I want to make sure that I'm giving people their rightful time to be able to enjoy their summers or enjoy their things too. Right. I think that as a business owner or a business leader, I think one of the things though that, you know, is important to me at least, is that you have to make sure that like you said, you're a workaholic. You have to, you know, keep that within reason. I think a lot of folks that are, you know, building businesses, doing things that excite them or, you know, get them fired up, and they're the champion behind it, they're the brains behind it, whatever, they work extremely hard, they work long hours, whatever, right? And I think that the practicality or the way that I look at that is like, I'm like, okay, well, I might have logged a 50, 60, 70, 80 hour work week, just depending on what week it is. And I don't work 8 to 5 or 9 to 5 or whatever. Right.
Right.
And I think what you're saying, and it's true, is like, while, you know, someone might be sitting at the desk and they come in and they do their job. Right. And, you know, yeah, they can't go off to Maine for 4 weeks or whatever they're going to do that. Right. But finding a system, like you said, that like is for me, it's like, I've found my system as the owner, as someone that might be in executive leadership or whatever, that, you know, works for me. And coincidentally, like you said, like it can't just be like only you reaping the benefits or whatever. You got to make sure that your culture aligns to like that same type of thing. It's just like, we work, like you have the poster up here, but no one's going to see it. It's like this work hard, play harder mentality, like you said, you know? So, and that's not me. That's just the mindset that I think it's important for people to know, is like, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of benefits that come when you stick it out for years of leading a business or entrepreneurship. There's plenty of rewards to come if you are one of those people that sticks it out and keeps it moving. But also at the same time, like you said, you have to reward your people and then make sure that you keep that culture as an integration, excuse me, of like what's important to the business as well for them. And I think that is a super important thing.
And I think what happens in that is those team members actually then want to even work harder because it's reciprocal in that moment, which then enables you to be able to do more of what you want to do. And again, it goes back to that why. So it's all cyclical for sure.
Let's wrap up with your final thoughts or any of the bigger, you know, like just kind of to land the plane, anything that you're like, man, I really, if anything was to be taken away from this, I'd like for this to be taken away. Or if you have any final thoughts, if you do have any.
Yeah. You know, I think one thing that I kind of go back to in our conversation, when we talked about like, well, how did I grow personally? How did that business grow so quickly? How's this business growing so quickly? Is, I'm surprised by the other businesses that I get to go see the it's not a lack of attention to detail. It's a lack of attention to data. That is a challenge. And so that was one of the other components that I learned when I was working on myself and developing, is if you don't have a compelling scorecard to know what your marketing is doing, to know what your sales is doing, to know where your accounting is and fulfillment and all of that kind of stuff, like start there and then let you, even if you're not a data person, I know there's a lot of entrepreneurs that, you know, they're that visionary type person and, you know, not necessarily like to sit down and look at spreadsheets and all that kind of stuff. I don't either, but I've learned how that helps me be more successful. And so any problem you're facing, you can typically go and find from that perspective. But a lot of times you'll spin your wheels solving the wrong problems if you're not actually looking at good data. So I wanted to kind of go back in there and throw that nugget in.
That's good. I love it. Thanks for being here. Thanks for letting me use the studio.
Yeah, man. It's been fun. Thanks for
being a part of it. So if you loved the episode, please like and subscribe it. No Suits Allowed again here with Mr. Adam. And he is here in Indianapolis, Indiana. If you ever want to come check him out, he's a stud. The company's great. So
yeah, we'd love to. Yeah, we love hosting people that come by and just like yourself and sit down and have conversations and idea share, whether you're in our industry or not.
Yeah.
And then I just wanted to point out that again, I really thought it was weird you made me sign a contract to actually not wear a suit today, but I still have my button up shirt. Like, I thought that was weird. I just wanted
to. No, the contract was that you don't wear a Pacer jersey because these Pacer fans, boy, you got to watch out.
Yeah.
I know that Oklahoma City, you know, I can't even give
you what? Face. You paid the refs off?
Like, yeah, we paid the refs off for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Scott Foster.
Exactly. Yeah.
How many times?
I don't mean to sound like a.
No, I know. Every time we'll wrap this up, but every time I text Aaron, it was like, He always had a valid reason. Then I'd give him something. I'd be like, I'd give him that data, boy. Yeah. Give him that. And he would be like, I'm not reading your text.
Yeah.
And I'm like, all right, man. You know, so, all right. Well, this has been fun. Thanks, dude.
Thanks, appreciate again, it, man.
Oh, fun. Awesome. And we'll see you next time. No Suits Allowed. Thanks, guys.